All for Nothing?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. You know the $13 billion the government's loaning General Motors to keep it alive? This morning, GM admitted it might well be in vain. In an SEC filing, GM said it is not planning to go bankrupt, but its auditors have concluded the company's survival is in, quote, substantial doubt. GM is looking for a total now of $30 billion from the government. Paul Eisenstein follows the auto industry for the DetroitBureau.com. Paul, what does today's filing tell us?
What it seems to say is that in a continuing downturn, where the market cost them another 50% drop in sales last month, it raises questions about whatever they do being enough to survive.
Do we have any more clues now as to what GM will do to try to live?
Well, we know that GM is going around the world at this point begging for cash. They have put in for a multi-billion dollar bailout in Europe. They're going to take it any way they can, whether it comes from the EU government, the Germans, the Spanish, the British. Heck, I was willing to drop a euro in while I was over there for the Geneva show if it would help.
Paul, we just bailed out AIG this week again. What are the chances we're going to put more money into GM?
I think that there is probably support from the Obama administration because they realize that letting GM fail is, first of all, symbolic, much like Lehman Brothers was last year. To let GM go down, which could have a huge domino effect, is something this administration clearly fears.
So what could be the last straw?
Well, it's clear that if GM does not get the bailout from the Obama administration, the additional cash it wants, it can't survive. So right now, GM has to convince a lot of people that the auditors may have doubts, but that it can survive. And it's becoming much more difficult by the day.
Paul Eisenstein with the DetroitBureau.com. Thank you.
Good to be with you.
GM shares are down 14% now. And after yesterday's 150-point bounce, the Dow is down 110 points, or 1.6% at 6,765. The NASDAQ is down 1.1%. The S&P 500 down 1.8%. Major European markets are down more than 2% at this hour, and Asian markets were mixed. First-time jobless claims unexpectedly dropped 4.5% last week, and retailers report February sales were down, but not as dismally as in January. Indian leader Mahatma Gandhi certainly left his mark on the world. He did not, however, leave much behind in the way of material things. Some of what he did leave, his famous sandals and wire-rimmed glasses, are scheduled to go up for auction today in New York. That's despite a strong protest from India, as Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson tells us.
The Indian outrage over the auction comes just a week after a similar protest by China. The Chinese tried, unsuccessfully, to stop the sale of two relics they say were stolen. Todd Sigaty sits on the board of directors at the International Society of Appraisers. He says controversies like this affect the sale price of the items.
It can actually scare off people, which is what China tried to do as well, saying that they would sue anybody who purchased those.
At the same time, he says, it creates a buzz and may add more bidders. Those bidders can buy insurance to keep the items from being repossessed.
But I would expect if there's an item such as these that come up that are already in dispute, the insurance is going to be outrageously expensive in order to gain coverage, so it may not even be worth it.
The sales of controversial items may not be worth it for auction houses either. More disputes like this may force them to spend more money on risk analysis at a time when they can least afford it. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Thursday, March 5th at Marketplace.org. The Bank of England and a European Central Bank are scheduled to announce decisions on interest rates this morning. In Britain, rates have been slashed in record time from 5% back in October to the current 1%. From London, Christopher Worth has more.
Economists are expecting the Bank of England to cut its interest rate by 0.5% today, giving the bank very little room to maneuver its monetary policy. That means the bank will also likely announce its intention to initiate a more unconventional approach known as quantitative easing. There's been a lot of talk about quantitative easing lately. The idea would be to allow the Bank of England to essentially create money by buying assets from banks, and the hope is to get that money flowing into the economy through lending. The European Central Bank has been much more cautious on this point. The ECB is hoping to avoid the political difficulties quantitative easing brings in choosing which countries to buy assets in. The European Central Bank is also expected to cut its interest rate 0.5% today. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
For college-bound students and parents, this is FAFSA time. That's the free application for federal student aid. In other words, the incredibly complicated form you have to fill out to get financial aid from the government. Marketplace's economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins us. Chris, President Obama says he wants to overhaul the financial aid system. He wants to cut out the banks. What is his plan?
Right. So we have this system, and it's called the Family Education Loan Program. And you can get your federally subsidized student loan through the banking industry. And remember, the government's underwriting the risk here. And the government's also paying the interest rate while you're in college. And it's been about a $4 billion a year subsidy. But the government's had this program since the early years of the Clinton administration, where you just borrow directly from the Department of Education. So you're not paying out any subsidy to private lenders. There's no extra $4 billion going out there. And what the Obama administration is saying is, let's phase out the subsidies, say the taxpayers about $50 billion over the next decade, and we're going to have students take their federally subsidized loans directly from the Department of Education.
If the private system is so inefficient, Chris, why do we do it this way?
It's this term called, this really ugly term, privatization. Privatization has kind of turned into this rigid ideology, and it's this notion that the private sector is always more efficient than government. Not necessarily true. And I think the student loan program is a classic example. There's every reason to believe that the private sector's made a nice little profit off the U.S. taxpayer for being less efficient.
So you're saying the last thing we need right now is helping out banks? What a crazy idea.
Well, let's get banks back into the business of actually making loans and evaluating risk. And yes, I know at this particular point in time, it's probably a little bit strange or a little bit of a detour to be beating up on the government, the taxpayer, throwing extra money into the system. Nevertheless, we are going to come out of this. So let's set up a program now that when it's time for students to borrow for college, they just do it from the Department of Education, directly from the government. If we're going to subsidize it, let's do it that way.
Are you sure you want taxpayers to take on even more risky loans, Mr. Farrell?
You know, the default rate is a little bit higher than the published default rate on student loans. And boy, we could have another discussion. I think we've seen the bursting of a student loan lending bubble, as many other bubbles have burst. Students are still going to borrow. So we're going to partially subsidize those loans. Let's do it the most efficient way possible. I've never quite understood this notion of why reward inefficiency.
Marketplace's economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thank you.
Thank you.
The travel industry is fighting back after some criticism that corporate travel in this economy is bad business if you are receiving bailout money. The industry has launched a nationwide ad campaign heralding the value of corporate travel. From Washington, Ronnie Radbill reports.
So what's frivolous business travel and what isn't when it comes to the taxpayer's dime?
If you are on government assistance, you probably have to tone down your spending a little bit.
Henry Hartevelt is a travel analyst with Forrester Research.
There are some bank executives who are going to have to understand that there's not only life outside the corporate jet, but there's this place that more than 80% of us fly, and it's called coach.
But as Hartevelt puts it, business travel is not the enemy, and gathering at conventions builds networks and so builds business. The U.S. Travel Association launched its media blitz to prevent millions of dollars in convention cancellations. Alan Feldman is with Las Vegas hotel holding company, MGM Mirage.
There are tens of thousands of jobs tied to this. I don't think we can forget for a second the importance that it has on the nation's economy.
Business travel is expected to take a hit this year, down $3.4 billion from a year ago. In Washington, I'm Ronnie Radbill for Marketplace.
Okay, pretend you have 90 seconds in an elevator with a rich investor. Now is your chance to pitch that great idea to somebody who can actually make it happen. That's the gist of the International Business Plan Competition taking place over the next couple of days at the University of San Francisco. $25,000 in prize money is at stake, not to mention some professional coaching that could come in very handy these days, as Marketplace's Bob Moon tells us.
The event is all the more competitive given that venture capital is in tight supply. Thomson Reuters figures investment in U.S. startups dropped 71% in January from a year earlier. Mark Heeson heads the National Venture Capital Association. He says it pays these days to focus on the task that's very much at hand for businesses around the world, cutting costs.
Anything that saves money for companies in a pretty dramatic fashion is being looked at today.
Heeson also says money-saving green technologies remain attractive to investors. But no matter how good the idea, finding funding these days, he says, requires a fire in the belly. And investors need a strong stomach. Professor Josh Lerner studies venture capital at Harvard Business School. He says the boom days are long over.
Returns over the last 5 years, even the last 10 years, are looking increasingly grim as that golden era recedes further into the past.
Of course, given all this, you could just send your money my way. No promises, but that's my pitch in less than a minute. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Clean Energy Fuels reports its earnings today. That company is the largest provider of natural gas for vehicle use in North America. Natural gas has as much as 95% lower emissions than traditional fuel. Many green companies are managing to get through this recession with minimal losses or even some profits. Now one company says the time is right to bring back a superhero who pioneered the green message almost 20 years ago. Jennifer Collins reports.
If the green message had a salesman, it would be this guy.
Captain Planet, he's our hero.
Captain Planet was the number one animated kids show in the early 90s. It chronicled the adventures of five eco-conscious kids, the Planeteers, and their mullet-sporting mascot. Now, the environmental website Mother Nature Network has acquired the rights to bring the show back online. And like any superhero, Captain Planet brings with him a pile of merchandise.
We have these fabulous solar battery-powered flashlights.
Barbara Pyle was the show's executive producer.
And these really cool water totes. There's even action figures.
Pyle says Captain Planet still has a loyal fan base among people in their 20s. A Facebook page for the superhero now has 180,000 fans. But consumer researcher Kit Yarrow says don't expect those fans to stick around forever.
It's more of an icon for people in their 20s, but it's not like, you know, unless they're stoned. It's not like people in their 20s are going to watch cartoons endlessly.
Yarrow says the show needs to build fans among the kids of today. Marketing experts say there is a precedent for this kind of thing. Look at Schoolhouse Rock. The franchise enjoys a near permanent spot on Billboard's list of best-selling kids' videos. Pyle says the captain has plenty of marketing potential.
Captain Planet is a pitchmeister, and he could be a good spokesperson for a lot of things.
As luck would have it, Captain Planet already has a catchy theme song.
Captain Planet, he's our hero, gonna take pollution down to zero. He's our
hero.
Pyle hopes to begin the big publicity push April 22nd, Earth Day. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
A few weeks ago, we started a new blog at marketplace.org. It's called Scratchpad. Your online host is Scott Jagow, and he joins me now. Scott, this week you have been blogging about the auto bailouts, people's gut reactions to our Treasury Secretary, and of course, AIG, which you call Dracula the insurance company. What's it been like for you?
With AIG, the more I read and think about this, the angrier it makes me. And Bernanke expressed his own anger this week about the way AIG has been run. It was once a well-run company. The problem is they got into hedge funds, and now we're bailing out a company who gambled and lost on hedge funds. That's the bottom line. I also pointed out that they're still paying four public relations firms to do work for them, which I'm sure the taxpayers won't be very happy about.
What's been interesting about what your readers are saying?
You know, I think just about everyone hates what's going on here with AIG. And we're just taking it on faith that if AIG collapses, then the entire Western financial system will go under. That's what Bernanke keeps telling us. But I've had people come up to me and say, seriously, what will happen? Will I spontaneously combust? What is the literal consequence of AIG going under? You know, generally, it's the lack of loans because this system will have no capital. So, but it's very general, and it just feels like a lot of fear is driving this.
You think the mainstream media tend to faithfully quote the officials and filter out some of the anger that's building out there?
Am I
overstating it?
No. But I think actually a lot of the anger is in the blogosphere.
That's not representative either.
Yeah, and it's not all constructive. You know, there's a lot of negativity that can feed on itself and become sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I think that, you know, we have to get it out. We have to express our anger about this, and we have to be able to express the sentiment that taxpayers are shouldering a ridiculous burden now. The government was supposed to be watching and protecting the system. They failed in that respect, and now the government is taking over the system. So it's very difficult for people who have grown up in a capitalist system to understand how we have gone so far the other way.
Well, we can read you now, Scott, at marketplace.org on the scratch pad. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.